curious, does anybody happen to know Ken and Margie? Just in a Church of Christ, small world kind of circles. Ken and Margie are members over at the Highland Oaks Church of Christ. And when I saw that video, it was engaging to me for a couple of reasons, but then I was looking in the back, I was like, I know that person. I know these people. They're not far from us. I recognize a lot of people in the back. I've preached over, a good friend of mine preaches at the Highland Oak Church of Christ. Never shared the story of Margie and Ellen with me, though. And I was struck by how different, if you met Margie and Ellen outside of any kind of context, you would not put the two together. They come from very disparate worlds, right? They are as different as they could possibly be. I wonder how many of us would have the patience to fight through the language barrier. It was difficult for me to even understand Ellen without the subtitles. Even with the subtitles, I was having a hard time. But here, Margie just decided that Ellen was worth her time and her effort because she was somebody that she wanted to introduce to Jesus. This morning, we're going to take what I'm calling a new look at an old Savior. As we're walking into this new year, I want us to maybe just take a little bit of a different look at what Jesus looks like and how Jesus sees other people. We're in the book of Mark this morning, so if you have your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 1. You've heard me say it before. Mark he just tells the story so differently than any other gospel writer. It's like Mark is in a hurry. He doesn't have a whole lot of time. And if you read the kind of language he uses, he says then, and then quickly, and then right after, and then we proceeded. It's almost as if Mark has got so much to say, he's excited. But it starts out like you might think it would. In the beginning of the good news, or excuse me, the beginning of the good news about Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God. And if you've been looking at, maybe if you read the other Gospels first, you would expect kind of what Clint shared with us this morning. We're ready to see a baby and an angel choir and a manger and some camels. But Mark doesn't do any of that. He tells the story so differently. It would be like if you asked about me, tell me your life story, Jeff. Tell me where you came from, who you are, who your people are. And I said, well, first let me tell you about my cousin, right? Because that's exactly what Mark does. He says, I want to tell you about Jesus, but first you need to know about John the Baptist. And it's just an awfully strange way, an odd way of starting a story. It's there in verse 4 that Jesus kind of magically appears. He's not born, he's just there. You're thinking, if you're like me, well, we don't have a genealogy. And we don't have, again, the angels in the manger. There's no King Herod, there's no cool poem like you get in John. There's no light and word and all of these cool images. Mary doesn't sing, the Magi don't search, the cattle aren't lowing. And they have Christmas without a baby. What if Mark was the only gospel you read? What if Mark was the only gospel you ever had access to? You wouldn't know any of the birth stories. You wouldn't even know, it's kind of like the origin stories of superheroes. You wouldn't have any of that. You would just have this superhero front and center, already full grown, doing these great works. Would that be enough? Mark does do what the other gospel writers do. He gives Jesus roots. Mark gives Jesus roots in the Old Testament and these prophecies about the Messiah. But what we're really seeing in this first chapter of Mark is that there is no one else at center stage but Jesus. Even when he talks about John the Baptist, the idea is, I'm just the headliner. I'm just the warm-up act. He's the headliner. I'm just here to kind of get this show started, to point the spotlight on who the real star of the show is. And if that weren't enough, you get this ultimate testimony right here in the first chapter. God himself, the creator of the universe, speaks in verse 10. It takes 10 verses to get to Jesus' baptism. That's quick storytelling, folks. Just as Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and a spirit descending on him like a dove and a voice from heaven saying, you are my son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased. Now, none of the normal trappings of the other gospel stories. Mark wants us to see Jesus, to take a look at Jesus. And in doing so, he's going to reveal Jesus by showing us the different interactions he has with people. And as Jesus calls his disciples and heals people and straightens out some religious teachers, we get a full picture of who Jesus is by what he does and by what he teaches. I want you to take a look at two pictures. Decide which you would be most likely to have over for dinner. Here's an older gentleman, gray hair, distinguished looking. He has his PhD. He's written several books. Oh, that's not him. Wait a minute. Go back, Trey. There he is. He's wearing a nice sweater, a sweater you might own. Doesn't he look fun? Wouldn't you love to have... Does anybody know who he is? Some of you know who he is. Someone's just not... Yeah, you don't trust him. Okay, well, here's your second choice then. You don't want to have him. How about this guy? Yeah. Liars. You would walk the other way. You would clutch your purse a little tighter. I know you would, Clint. You would say, I don't know, this guy looks like danger, right? Does anybody recognize these two people? We'll start with the first one. Anybody give me a hand raise and tell me who the older gentleman, the British gentleman in the sweater is? Oh, I tipped my hand. He is British. No? Good. How about the second guy? Monty, did you know him? It is Richard Dawkins. You win nothing. So congratulations. You were awake during the sermon. Second guy. I bet Monty knows this guy too. No? Anybody? Somebody? Well, I'm going to tell you. Let's start with Richard Dawkins. I'll give you a few of his writings. After sleeping through 100 million centuries, we finally opened our eyes on a sumptuous planet, sparkling with color, bountiful with life. So far, so good. Within decades, we must close our eyes again. Isn't it a noble and enlightened way of spending our brief time in the sun to work at understanding the universe and how we have come to wake up in it? This is how I answer when I'm asked, as I am surprisingly often asked, why do I bother to get up in the mornings? I am against religion because it teaches us to be satisfied with not understanding the world. Faith is the great cop-out, the great excuse to evade the need to think and to evaluate evidence. Faith is belief in spite of, even perhaps because of, the lack of evidence. Yes, Richard Dawkins is an evolutionary biologist, a professor at Oxford University, author of The Blind Watchmaker, The God Delusion, probably responsible for more people embracing atheism in the 20th century, I think, than any other author. Second guy, that is Brian Head Welch. Head is his nickname. He was, and is now again, actually, the lead guitarist for a band called Korn. Anybody know who Korn is? You younger people, explain it to the older people. Brian had all the worldly fame, the money, the success that anybody could want. But he also had a methamphetamine addiction, alcoholism, and frequent suicide attempts. His personal life was out of control, and in 2004, he got invited by a friend to church. Can you imagine? They took him in. He went home, started snorting drugs, and prayed to the Lord that he would reveal himself. Can you imagine? In 2005, he startled the music world when he left that band, Korn. People thought he was crazy, probably still do. But he had this encounter with Jesus. He went to Israel with a group from a California church, was baptized in the Jordan River. He has three Christian music albums, has written a book entitled Save Me From Myself. Now, I do want you to know there's a rest of the story here. Just a few years ago, he decided to go back to his band. And there's a wonderful story about that. If you have a chance to look him up, look on I Am Second, a great witness, a great testimony about what's going on. But I want you to hear his words. He says, my prayer is that people would realize how real God is and want to hunger after him more than anything in this world. I just pray that eyes will be open. He's lovable, man. He's so awesome. It's like I'm so content with everything and I want the whole world to be saved. I know that's kind of an immature Christian. But why me, you know? Why do I get this goodness, Lord? I'm saved by grace only. He led me into that church. He's a big God. And I pray that this book imparts a hunger to Christians and others. And I love this. And if tons of drug addicts get free from their drugs, well, that's awesome too. Yeah, I wonder who I'd be more comfortable at my dinner table with, Brian or Richard. We read a similar story in Mark chapter 1. We'll start in verse 16. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." And at once they left their nets and followed him. When he had gone a little bit farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat and the hired men and followed him. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," Jesus said sternly. "Come out of him." The impure spirit shook the man violently and came up out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went over, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door. Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons. But he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That's why I've come." So they traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. Verse 40, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately, the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell anyone. Don't tell this to anyone. But go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. So, which of these people do you most identify with? Not just Richard and Brian, but the people that Jesus encountered. When I started thinking about the people with the impure spirit, I thought, is that Richard or is that Brian? At one time in their lives, I imagine it could have been both of them, right? Which one of them needed the healing more? Which one was doing more damage to the name of Jesus? Which one am I? Oh, I think if I had to pick an illustration to tell you who I am, I read this years ago, and it stayed with me. I thought about it this week as it's cold, as you might be helping your kids on and off with coats and stuff. It was a story about a kindergarten teacher, and she was helping her student put on his boots. Do you remember this story? And the little boy asked for help, and the teacher could see why. He was struggling. With her pulling and him pushing, these boots, see, they were living in a place much colder than where we are, these boots didn't want to go on. And when the second boot finally sucked into place, the teacher noticed that she was sweating and the kid was sweating. She was tired. She almost whimpered when the little boy said, "Teacher, my shoes are on the wrong feet." She looked down. Sure enough, they were. Wasn't any easier pulling the boots off than it was pulling them on. And so with a lot of effort and a lot of work, they got them off, managed to get them on the right feet and then shoved them back. And then he announced, "These aren't my boots." She bit her tongue rather than get right in his face and scream, "Why didn't you say so?" You always want to do that, don't you? "Why didn't you say so?" Once again, she struggled to help him put on those ill-fitting boots, and he said, "They're my brother's boots. My mom made me wear them." She didn't know whether she should laugh or cry. And then she said, well, where are your mittens? Before she released him to go outside and play. I stuffed him in the toes of my boots. I wonder if God feels that way with me sometimes. That I'm just struggling with this life of faith. That I can barely get it all sorted out. And I'm constantly going to him for help. And as soon as it seems that we've got it sorted out, my mittens are in the bottom of my boots. So the person I want to look at in Mark this morning, we're going to do it very quickly, is the last one we read about. We started in verse 40 reading about this leper. And the leper had two problems, didn't he? One was leprosy, and the other was leprosy. His first problem was leprosy because physically, leprosy, well, it's really a wide range of skin diseases. It's not just one thing as we would understand it. But it was horrible. In the heat and in the climate of Israel, it would have been itchy. It would have been very painful. It would have been incapacitating. But we also know that leprosy wasn't just a physical problem, a physical ailment for this man. It was a spiritual problem as well. It branded him. He was ritually unclean. And so they were forced to live outside of the city, avoid contact with people. They had to announce themselves. Leprosy, kind of like our story just from a few weeks ago, was associated with sin. When the apostles asked Jesus, whose sin was it, his mother or his father, this man was born blind? People assumed that the leper was given that disease because of something they had done spiritually. It's interesting that people in the Bible are not healed of leprosy. They're always cleansed of leprosy. Leprosy was regarded as incurable. And the Bible only records two people outside of these stories that were cleansed of leprosy by God, Miriam and Naaman in Numbers and in 2 Kings. And so here's this leper suffering in the worst of ways, spiritually and physically, and he has this personal encounter with Jesus. Jesus sees something different. He looks past the dreadlocks. He looks past the tattoos. Maybe he looks past the hardened heart, past the scientific knowledge, against this heart that's so full of yourself that you can't see anything else. And Jesus touches the leper and cleanses him. He made him clean. So that what becomes unclean becomes clean. It's what we read in 2 Corinthians 5. God made him who had no sin. God made him who was completely clean to be sin, to become unclean for us so that in him we might become clean. Jesus says something funny too in verse 44. Don't tell anybody about this. And to that I want to say, yeah, right. I'm going to tell everybody I know. One, because I want them to understand that I'm no longer an outcast. I'm now invited in. I don't know why Jesus says, don't tell anybody. Maybe it's because he wanted to avoid being just a miracle worker. Maybe because he knew that the crowds weren't ready to understand his true identity yet. I don't know. But look at the response. The leper's witness of I was unclean and now I'm clean means that news spreads quickly about Jesus. People came from everywhere. We know that people came from everywhere, so that in a sense, his testimony, the testimony of this leper was maybe more effective than 100 sermons, right? It's the outcome that draws people in. It's the fact that somebody was this and now they're that. That's what's so compelling about Brian's story. Is that we can look at somebody who is lost in drugs, who is lost in sin, who is lost in suicidal thoughts, and he says, God healed me of that. Knowing who I am and whose I am changed me in a way that nothing else could. It's a powerful testimony. The picture that's emerging of Jesus. Oh, we talked about the Word and the light and the flesh and God with us. This picture that's emerging with Jesus is not one that we're expecting. Not one that's meant for polite company. It's full of demon-possessed people. What do we do with demon-possessed people? How does that fit into our 21st century brains? How do we explain it? I don't know. The people that Jesus came to heal and to love and to save are not the kind of people that you would think Jesus would want or that would want Jesus. And that should tell us something. It should tell us something about how Jesus sees them, but it should also inform us about how we see them. You've heard me read it before, C.S. Lewis. My idea of God is not a divine idea. It has to be shattered time after time. He shatters it himself. He's the great iconoclast, the breaker and destroyer of images. Jesus is the supreme example. He leaves all previous ideas of the Messiah in ruins. And however great we can imagine it, Jesus is much higher, is much greater than that. As much grace as we think he has the capacity to give, it's even more than that. It's deeper than that. That I believe that he can reach somebody with dreadlocks and tattoos and drug addicted and into heavy metal, but I also believe he can reach somebody who's PhD educated and teaches at Oxford and thinks he knows everything about science and how we were created when he scoffs at the very existence of the one who created him. And I want to see Richard through the same eyes that I see Brian. And I want to see the chief priests and the Pharisees in the same way that Jesus sees the lepers and the woman at the well. I'll finish with one story. Hey, let's play another game. Do you recognize this lady? Do you know who she is? I didn't get it, Trey. Hey, Trey, real quick. Can we try to do this? I don't know if I can talk you through this. On the desktop, I want you to see her because I don't think you know who she is. On the desktop, there's a black and white picture of a beautiful African-American woman. Can you? Ian can do it. You got to see this lady because she's not what you would expect. Oh, they're working. It's going to be good, I promise. It's tough for those guys back there, by the way, following me. If I gave you my notes, you would, Jim, you would just shake your head. You would. You'd go, what is he doing? That's not on the page. Is it there? There she is. Okay, you recognize the stone gentleman in the back, right? Abraham Lincoln. The lady in front? Yes, it's Marian Anderson. Monty and Dave, you want a free Whataburger, okay? Come see me after church. It's Marian Anderson. Marian was born into poverty right around World War I. She grew up in Philadelphia. She had this beautiful voice. People of her church noticed. They heard her sing. And they said, we've got to get some money together to send this girl. And so they girl off to be trained to be a singer. And so they raised 126 pennies, nickels, and dimes to begin her voice lessons. And when she was 18 years old, they arranged for this audition for her with this famous music instructor. She had the audition, but she failed. Her church believed in her. They arranged a concert of music in the town hall of New York City, and some people came, but she was not ready for the exposure, and the critics tore her up. For almost a year, Marian Anderson lived, or wallowed, I guess you could say, in self-pity. Finally, Marian's mother came to her and said, Marian, I want you to think about this failure just a little bit and pray about it a lot. That's good advice, Mom. I want you to think about it a little bit and pray about it a lot. All the people in Marian's church were praying for her, and then her mother said something she'll never forget. Her mother said, Marian, you must learn that grace comes before greatness. Grace comes before greatness. Marian Anderson got over her early failures and her very public embarrassment. She began voice lessons. She became a rather famous lady. In fact, she became one of the most celebrated singers of the 20th century, although most of us couldn't pick her out of a lineup. Music critic Alan Bly said her voice was a rich, vibrant contralto of intrinsic beauty. Most of her singing career was spent performing in front of sold-out, standing-room-only crowds. She toured with famous orchestras, large music venues through 1925 all the way through 1965. And here she was in front of the Lincoln Memorial giving a concert in front of 75,000 people, millions listening around the world on the radio. One day when Marion was a much older woman, a reporter asked her, "Marion, what's the greatest moment of your entire career? Could it be receiving an award from the President of the United States, the Medal of Freedom? Perhaps it was being a delegate representing the United States in front of the United Nations. Maybe it was performing privately for President and Mrs. Eisenhower or for the King and Queen of England, kind of a big deal. Perhaps it was writing a book that would become a bestseller." She had all of those things to choose from. And what did Marion say? "The greatest day of my life was when I went home to my mother and told her, 'Mama, you don't have to take in washing anymore.' Mama was right," she says. "Grace comes before greatness." What we learn about the interaction between Jesus and all these people, the picture that emerges even without this miracle birth, even without the genealogies, even without the images of light and word, what we see who Jesus is one who loves his people unconditionally with a depth and a breadth that we can't understand. He sees in Brian and he sees in Richard the same thing. An unclean soul needing cleansing. And he reaches out his hand to touch us. And before we can ever be great, we have to accept the grace of Jesus. I hope you know that. I hope you've done that. I hope you've given your life to Jesus. If you haven't, today's a great day to do it. Or maybe you just need to, as Marion's mama said, maybe you need to think a little bit and pray a lot. Well, we've got some people that want to pray with you and pray for you. And so if you need to have some prayers, there'll be our elders and their wives in the back. If you need to come forward and commit your life to Christ, we want you to do that as well. More than anything, my prayer is that God would change my eyes to see people as Jesus sees them. Let's stand and sing.